Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, December 24th, 2025, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch-ND, naturopathic physician. My co-host Ron Mendoza is busy doing other stuff. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch-ND for 30 days, and also on my YouTube channel at Radio Naturopath. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. More stuff going on. I had a lovely chiropractic appointment today, and he put me back in alignment. So Dr. Scott is being very good about staying away from the surgical region, adjusting a lot of other things. The other thing is I've had a cough and cold for almost 2 weeks now. So I'm a lot better than I was. I don't know if you remember the last time I had a live show, literally got sick during the show. This cold came on. I started dripping into the back of my throat and I started choking on it and coughing. So this is a very interesting cold that's going around, and I think it's very contagious. It makes me wonder if it's COVID adjacent, like maybe it's a coronavirus, but it's not COVID. We're pretty certain that it's not COVID because Ron and I both had it and we tested ourselves for it. For COVID, and it came back negative. But there are other coronaviruses. So coronaviruses are one of the many viruses that can give you an upper respiratory infection, along with adenoviruses and rhinoviruses and enteroviruses. Good times. So we don't know if that's what this is, or could it be a strain of COVID that evades the traditional tests? Anyway, we're out of COVID tests in the house. So next time I go to the drugstore, I'm going to have to get more COVID tests. So we just have some on hand for just in case. Hopefully we won't get sick for a while. I think that this cold that's going around is very contagious because Ron and I usually do not get sick in November. And we both came down with this in November. Ron had been burning the candle at both ends. He'd been working at the registrar's office, you know, because he's the registrar of voters for the town of Mansfield. So he was working many, many hours for a whole week. And when he got finished with that, he went right to Chicago to go visit with his son. And then he came back. And so he was flying on a plane and stuff, could have picked something up, dove right in and started teaching his fitness classes again. And then several days, you know, the Wednesday after he came back from Chicago, he went to a basketball game. So he could have picked this bug up anywhere. And like I said, I think it's real contagious. My staff said, don't worry, come into the office. We don't want to wear masks. We don't care if you have it. For a week, the first week that I had this, I did work, but I worked virtually. I wouldn't see patients in person. And for the first day of this full week, I saw patients virtually. And then Wednesday was the first day that I felt better. And I decided to see patients in person again on Thursday. So I did that. And I'm feeling a lot better. But this thing, it's a hanger-oner, and it's weird because the congestion gets stuck. It sort of gets stuck in your sinuses. It's not one of those colds that you have a very runny nose and you're blowing your nose all the time. You blow your nose once in a while and sneeze sometimes, but it likes the sinuses and back of your throat. I wonder if there's such a thing as an anaerobic virus. I don't know. It doesn't seem to like the front of your nose. It likes the back of your nose. It creates mucus and then it gives you postnasal drip, which drips into your throat. And at the beginning of the illness, you get a sore throat. And I had that the first day or so, and then it went away. But it sucks the water out of you. It makes you want to drink like a fish. So you'll see me drinking a lot. The other interesting thing I found is that I'm not real excited by plain water. I mean, I don't dislike it, but I don't seem to be able to get it down. Like when I sip on plain water, I don't seem to want to drink it. So it seems to be better to drink water with something in it. And then we go back to Susan Weed, who says you should never drink plain water. I don't know if I agree with that, but I do think that water, it's not great to drink distilled water. It's not great to drink water with absolutely nothing in it, that it should at least have some good minerals. And I think our well water, which is what this is just our well water, you know, it has a filter coming into the house because it's coming from the well. It's very good. It tastes very good. I think it has a good mineral proportion. nothing wrong with it, but I'm kind of like, eh. So I find it's easier to get fluids down, and Ron was remarking on the same thing. It's easier to get fluids down if you put electrolytes into it. So whatever your favorite electrolytes are, just try to get electrolytes without chemicals. If you don't have a blood pressure issue or a reason why you shouldn't have a lot of salt, you can get some of the better electrolytes at the store. And if they do have a lot of sodium in it, it's okay as long as you tolerate the sodium and it doesn't make you swell and it doesn't raise your blood pressure. And for me, because I have high blood pressure and I'm taking a medicine for that, and during the course of this cold, I wasn't doing cardio. I stopped doing my PT exercises and I stopped doing cardio just so my body could get more rest. So the only thing I was doing is because I got to keep limber. So there were some days when I felt awful and I just didn't do anything. But most of the days I did yin and restorative yoga or just light stretchy yoga. And that's all I did. And I think tomorrow I'm going to get back on the bike. When I say back on the bike, we're talking indoors and, you know, slightly more than half an hour and that's it. So I've been taking it real easy to give my immune system a chance to work on this thing. And so this cold seems to want lots of fluid, but fluid with stuff in it. So of course, try not to have a Coca-Cola. Now, interestingly, I went to Vernon and I had a root canal. So that's a whole other thing. And I should probably talk about the pros and cons of the root canal, but I decided to do it because my dentist scared me into it. She said, if you let this thing fester, you could get a brain infection. So I said, okay. And I also wasn't keen about losing the tooth. Some people say, all right, if you need a root canal already, you should just take the tooth out. And she said, you don't have to do that. You could get the root canal. I'll make you a crown and that'll be that. So I need two. And I had this procedure in Vernon. And Wednesday was the first day I felt like I wasn't so sick anymore. I wasn't acutely ill. And I don't think I'm contagious anymore. But I definitely still have congestion and pressure and that drip down the back of my throat. And I was concerned that if I went to this appointment, first of all, I asked them, are you okay with this? I don't want to get you sick. They said, we don't care. I mean, this all winter, all our patients are getting, you know, they're in some stage of having a cold. And of course, when they're working on you, they're masked and gloved and you've got a dental dam on and, you know, root canal is a pretty serious thing. It's very interesting. So if you want to hydrate yourself during this illness, first of all, it makes you lightheaded because of the pressure. It likes your Eustachian tubes, so it gets into your Eustachian tubes. The Eustachian tubes, remember, are the tubes that go from your ears to your throat, and they're part of the pressure equalization system in your sinuses. And when they get inflamed, it makes you dizzy. And so let's talk about the Eustachian tubes for a second. So that's part of how that goes. And when you have that ear popping sound, it's because you've got inflammation in your Eustachian tubes. You've got Eustachiitis. And in naturopathic medicine, we have this cool procedure that you can do. It's called the endonasal. I haven't had one in years and I haven't tried to do it to somebody because I don't feel confident doing it. But what it is you put on either a finger cot. A finger cot is just, you know, it's just basically a glove, but just for your finger. You can put on a finger cot or you can put on a rubber glove or, you know, or a nitrile glove. We don't use latex anymore because someone could be allergic to it. So you put on a glove and then you take some essential oil, some nice aromatic essential oil. Anise works nicely. Peppermint is fine. Eucalyptus is fine. A bitter orange, anything that aromatic, and that's going to open you up. Peppermint would probably be a very good choice. I remember we used to, when we did the endonasal, we would often do anise oil. It was very nice. And so it's sort of, it's licorice-y, but it isn't licorice. Anise and licorice are not at all the same thing, even though they have a similar scent and smell. Fennel, fenugreek, licorice, and anise all smell similar to each other, but I'm not sure about fenugreek. I'm not sure what family fenugreek is in, but fennel and anise are both, well, it's not called the umbelliferae family anymore. It's the carrot family. They're in the same family, and licorice is not in that family at all. I can't remember if licorice is a legume. It's in a different family, though. But they all have that same sort of scent. Anyway, anise works very nicely. So you put a drop of the anise oil on, and the person that's going to do the endonasal asks you to open your mouth very wide, and then they have to access the opening to your Eustachian tube, and it's kind of behind your tonsil, if you still have tonsils. And so you have to find the spot, and then they, with the essential oil, they massage that opening, and the essential oil tends to open it up, and then your ears open up, and it feels really good. But to get there, if you have a strong gag reflex, it's very difficult. And I had a friend who's a naturopath years ago perform an endonasal on me, and I almost bit his finger off, and I grabbed his wrist really hard. That was my friend Andy, Dr. Andy Rubman. He gave me an endonasal, and I almost bit his finger. I felt bad. He was doing this old-timey naturopathic thing to me because I was sick, and he was trying to help me, and I almost bit his finger off. And I did the same thing with Dr. LaGuardia. He syringed for the second time last week. He syringed my ears because I tend to get earwax, and this time I didn't grab his wrist. I did the first time, but this time I just sat there sort of unhappily while he syringed my ears. It was worth it, though, because he got the wax out. Anyway, so that's what an endonasal is. You get someone who knows what they're doing. They get their finger, they cover it up, put essential oil on, they massage the back of your Eustachian tube to open it up so it opens up your ears. Now, most people don't know how to do that, and I wouldn't feel confident enough to do that. So one of the ways to do it, to get the nice essential oils, is to, you could do essential oils, or you can just do aromatic tea, and breathing them in any which way can also, it's not as direct as getting, as, you know, massaging the end of the Eustachian tube, but if you breathe in the aromatic oils, it can help to open things up. And one way to do that is the steam inhalation, where you take a pot of water and you put it on the stove and you boil it and you turn off the burner. You never put your face over water that is on a flame or, you know, on an active burner. Turn the burner off. And then once the burner's turned off, you can put essential oil in it. And again, peppermint, eucalyptus, anise, bitter orange, anything that's going to be aromatic and help to open you up, you can put that in. You put your face over the, remember the burner is off, and you take a towel and you put it over your head and you inhale the steam. And that can be really helpful. And another thing you can do is same thing in the shower. Just get a bottle, a little spray bottle with some water in it and put in some essential oil. Eucalyptus is great for that. Eucalyptus is really nice when you're feeling like you have bronchitis and you're having trouble breathing. So you put in eucalyptus in a spray bottle, you get in the shower, get the shower nice and steamy, then spray the eucalyptus and breathe that in, and it can really help you to open you up and breathe. Eucalyptus would be good, mint would be good. I think those are two really good ones. Tea tree oil would probably be fine too. I mean, we think of tea tree oil as just something that's antimicrobial, and you know, tea tree oil kills just about anything. Kills fungus, viruses, bacteria, but it's certainly aromatic and it can open you up. I mean, we like to put tea tree oil when you're doing a neti pot, which is another thing you can do. Although this illness, the neti pot is difficult because it may not go through. So neti pot, you know, you have your little neti pot, which is, you know, it's the shape of a Aladdin's lamp, and you put in, depending on the size of the neti pot, you fill it up, and a lot of neti pots have about a half cup volume, and you put in warm water. It has to be Goldilocks, not too hot, not too cold, and then you can put in, and then you put in salt to your comfort level, which winds up being somewhere between a quarter and a half teaspoon of salt. It could be plain sea salt. If all I have is like nice pink salt from Utah, I use that, and that doesn't dissolve. When you use pink salt or Himalayan salt, it doesn't dissolve all the way. That some of the elements don't dissolve well because it doesn't just have sodium chloride and has other stuff. But it's fine. It'll go through and it'll come out. It just won't dissolve and it'll come out the other end. So you dissolve that salt in. You can put a drop of essential oil in. Once again, any of the ones I mentioned, tea tree oil is great, peppermint, eucalyptus. But I would only put in a drop or two, no more than that, and because it's, when it gets in your nose, it's very strong. And you could skip the essential oil altogether. I find that if I get the salt content right, just the plain salt neti pot is very soothing. But And so then you put it in your nose and it drips in, it goes through your sinuses to the other side of your nose and then comes out the other side. And you'd go back and forth doing each side until the neti pot's empty, and it can really help you. Neti pots can shorten the amount of time that you have that cold. So I haven't been doing the neti pot. I've been concerned that it's not going to go through, but I do nasal spray every day anyway. And my nasal sprays, I have one that has xylitol, grapefruit seed extract, and salt, of course. And then I also mix alkylol with it, which is a combination of various herbs and essential oils. So it's half and half xylitol, grapefruit seed, and salt, and half alkylol. And I mix that together, and that's one of the sprays. And then I also use fulvic acid. And the fulvic acid is nice because fulvic acid is one of the, it comes from the dirt, and it has lots of minerals in it. And the nice thing about fulvic acid is it makes it so that viruses don't stick to the inside of your nose. And so I use both of those, and I use both of those every day anyway. So I've been using those. I haven't done the neti pot, and I could try it. I just want to see if it goes through. One of my staff, she seems to have come down with this. She was saying she's having trouble getting the neti pot to go through. So I instructed her in terms of alternating hot and cold compresses. And she said, wow, that sounds really good. So listen to this. If you can't get anything to go through and spraying stuff in your nose isn't working and you're having trouble, you do the steam inhalations and the spray in the shower can be very soothing. But if that's not quite working, this is a really nice thing you can do. You get washcloths. You know, they can be on the thicker side, but whatever you have is fine. So what you do is you take a washcloth and you wring it out in as warm water as you can tolerate, and you lie down with it across your nose and sinuses, and you just lie there for 3 minutes and let it warm your nose up, and it'll get the circulation going. And then you take the washcloth or get a different washcloth. Pardon me, I'm going to cough. You wring out another washcloth in cold water, as cold as you can stand it, and throw that on for 30 seconds. And then you keep alternating for a total of 3 times. And the alternating hot and cold will get things flushed and get things moving and make it so that things go through better. So again, this illness wants fluid, preferably not plain fluid. So remember to get electrolytes into your water, you don't necessarily need a product. You can get plain salt, you can get plain sea salt, or your favorite pink salt, Himalayan, Celtic, which is not pink, or, you know, salt from Utah, which is also pink, like Himalayan. Pinch of that, splash of fruit juice, and you've got electrolytes. And you can titrate the juice to, the juice to salt ratio till it's tolerable for you. And that will go down probably easier than the plain water. If you have a favorite electrolyte, just make sure it doesn't have chemicals or colors in it. And again, if you don't have a blood pressure problem and you tolerate salt, you can get any of the nice natural ones that they sell at the store. They have them in the supermarket. They have them at various shops and online. I use an electrolyte drink electrolyte powder in general that's low in salt. It does have some salt in it, but not a lot. It has other things. It has some trace minerals. It has potassium and a couple other minerals. And it's sweetened with stevia and it's fruit flavored. So that's my preference if I'm going to do electrolyte. The other thing I find really hydrating is watermelon water. Not everybody likes that, but the watermelon water, when I drink that, I feel like if I'm feeling a little lightheaded and off and dehydrated, I drink a quarter cup of that and I instantly feel better. I used to prefer coconut water. Coconut water works pretty well that way too. I find the coconut water, and so you try coconut water, it's really good. And one of the things you can do with coconut water, if you find it too sweet, is just dilute it. And which is something I should probably try as well. But the coconut water, I find that when I drink it, I find it too sweet. The watermelon water, I don't find as sweet. And I instantly feel better. It's incredible. So watermelon water is something you can readily get at the store. They have it at health food stores and they have it at the supermarket. And it's really easy. If you like the taste of watermelon, it's just watermelon juice. It's fine. Well, and it's kind of dilute. And it's very good. If you have watermelon, now there's not, I don't know that there's any watermelon in the store now, because it would have to be, I don't know where they would grow watermelon. It would be on the other side of the world. Maybe in the winter it'll come from Chile, I guess. But, you know, it's not in the store right now. So you're not going to be able to make it yourself unless you get frozen. I don't know that watermelon freezes well. So anyway, they're making it somewhere. Because you can buy watermelon water in the store all year. I do notice that sometimes they have it and sometimes they don't. And so that may have to do with whether you can get access to it. Of course, drink soup. Eat soup. Drink tea. I wouldn't overdo caffeine because you really want to rest and relax with this thing. But I have been craving tea, as in tea with caffeine, like the Camellia sinensis, not doing a lot of caffeine. So if I have full caffeine tea, I'm making sure I have it on a day when I'm relatively active. Otherwise, I'm having decaffeinated black tea. I made myself a matcha latte. And then, of course, whatever herbal tea you would like. But this cold wants spicy, or you want spicy when you have this cold. Spicy really helps it because it's a clingy, damp, stagnant cold. And the things like ginger, garlic, if you tolerate it, turmeric, cayenne pepper, it all helps to move this thing through. And if you can get a nice, strong ginger turmeric tea, and a nice way to drink the ginger turmeric tea is to throw cinnamon into it and honey. Honey is great. So the thing with honey is great for coughs. And honey has been studied in children to work better than cough medicine. So when they say cough medicine, I'm not sure which actual medicine they're comparing it to, but honey can work very well. It can work better than your dextromethorphan, which if you can help it stay away from the dextromethorphan, because dextromethorphan is an opioid and it's in common cough suppressant. It is a cough suppressant. Opioids are cough suppressants because they're respiratory suppressants. All of them do that. But dextromethorphan is sold as a cough medicine, and it's a suppressant. And if you have gunk inside you, you don't really want to suppress your cough. You'd like to get the gunk out. So it's better not to use that. So it's better to use cough syrups. And if you can get a cough syrup that has honey in it, that's great. So there's a couple. I have a cough syrup. I take a little bit of that every day all year, and it helped. I think that my bronchitis would be worse if I didn't do that. But it has things like wild cherry and yerba santa and elecampane and mullein. So those are good lung tonics. Marshmallow root. Those are all great lung tonics and in Western medicine. And then I also have a cough syrup that I got from the Asian grocery store, and it's made in China. And it has Chinese herbs in it. It has a little bit of licorice. It has loquat. You'll find honey and loquat in Chinese products. And you can get honey loquat drops. I don't know that they have them at that Asian grocery store, but I was able to get them online. There's a classic brand that has a distinctive red and white designed tin that you get it in, and has these lovely honey loquat drops, has some menthol, eucalyptus or something in it, and then a bunch of other herbs. Fritillary is another Chinese herb that goes in it. Platycodon is in it. So the whole list of all these neat Chinese herbs, licorice is among them, and there might be cherry in it as well. It's palatable, and you can get it at the Asian grocery store. So I have that. I'm taking at least a spoonful of that a day. So the other thing is, when you have bronchitis, especially when you have mucus that won't move, there's a couple things you can take that are mucolytic. Now, the very first mucolytic that you should be using is this one. Water. The more hydrated you are, the thinner your mucus will be. And like I said, this mucus, your body is using a lot of resources to make mucus to fight so that it has a medium. It's a substrate for your white blood cells to fight the virus. So you get you're down a quart. So you have to drink more fluids than usual. And what I find is nighttime is the worst time, because this cold, when you lie down, you cough more because it drains into the back of your throat. The secretions pool in your bronchi and it makes you cough when you're lying down. So upright is your friend. Lying down is not so good. Some people find that they have to prop up their pillows in order to sleep more comfortably. I just, you know, hope I sleep. And then if I will wake up in the middle of the night coughing, unfortunately. So it's one of those. By the way, if you have a condition where you cough when lying down and you stop coughing when you sit up, if you like to use homeopathy, the classic homeopathy for that symptom is pulsatilla. So if you have any homeopathic pulsatilla on hand and you have that symptom, you could try taking that and see if it helps. So that's something you do. But at night, if you're sleeping and your mouth is open, like your mouth is open and you've got all these secretions happening and you're not awake so that you can drink, you get very parched. So you wind up waking up through the night and, you know, I have water on my nightstand and I sip on the water during the night and you have to go to the bathroom more. And I wake up because, you know, I wake up really dry because I'm trying to sleep. And the amount you sleep, you are not able to rehydrate based on the amount of mucus that you're making, which is unfortunate. So I find that when I wake up in the morning, I'm making up for it. And then I'm going to the bathroom a lot because I'm drinking so much in the morning. You know, I get up in the morning, I have water with my first tincture, which is motherwort. And then I have a quarter cup of juice, whether it's smoothie juice or I have watermelon water. I've been doing the watermelon water. So those are generally what I have. And then I have a protein shake, and the protein shake is a good 14 to 16 ounces of fluid. So then I make up for it with all of that, and then have water on hand and just sip on that. And then at some point, if I'm sitting still enough, I'll make a cup of tea and I'll have at least half the cup of tea while also sipping water. If I'm at the office, I'm generally putting electrolytes in the water because one of the things about the office is if I'm seeing patients, I am talking a lot. And when you talk a lot and you're down a quart because you're making mucus anyway, is, you know, you get dry. So I always have to have water on hand. I go through a lot of water, tea when I'm at the office, and usually water with electrolytes. I use my electrolytes at the office. And because I need to get hydrated fast. So I found that too. So fluid is the best way to get, it's one of the main ways to get your mucus thinner. But there's things you can take that thin your mucus. One of them is N-acetylcysteine, or NAC, and the other is guaifenesin. So NAC is N-acetylcysteine. N-acetylcysteine does a lot of lovely things. It's a wonderful antioxidant. It's very detoxifying. It can kill spike proteins. I imagine if NAC can kill spike proteins, it probably can also kill other. It's antiviral in general. We think of it as an antiviral. It's a great antioxidant. It's great for detoxification in your liver. And it is a mucolytic. So I haven't been taking NAC. I think I'm going to add the NAC back in. So NAC is a big one. The other, guaifenesin. So guaifenesin is an extract of guaiacum bark. And it's a natural product. So guaifenesin is the active ingredient in Mucinex. And you can get generic Mucinex, generic guaifenesin at the drugstore and at the supermarket. And guaifenesin, if you get plain guaifenesin, all it does is thin mucus. The only thing you have to be careful of, if you take enough of it, it'll give you an upset tummy. It'll make you nauseous. But that's if you hit 2,400 milligrams in a day. And I generally don't do that. If I'm going to take guaifenesin, I have a natural product that has guaifenesin, and then it has mullein, fenugreek, and then another, you know, maybe it might be fennel. And so it has those three herbs plus the guaifenesin, and they're only 200 milligram pills. So you can titrate your dose very finely. If you buy guaifenesin at the drugstore, first of all, it's probably going to have chemicals in it. It has blue dye and other things in it. And the smallest dose is 600 milligrams. Now, if you get guaifenesin at the drugstore, it might be combined with dextromethorphan, which I'm discouraging you. Unless you're coughing so bad that you can't even sleep, you could do a little dextromethorphan. Just be careful because it can be addictive and it knocks you out and it can cause cognitive issues. So there's dextromethorphan, and then it can also come with a decongestion. And usually the decongestion is going to be something. I don't think you can get pseudoephedrine in your as your decongestion anymore. I think it's usually phenylephrine. But phenylephrine is a sympathomimetic, and it tightens up your, it constricts your blood vessels and your passages, so, and it dries you out. So that's how it's a decongestant. I recommend staying away from that stuff. You don't need to get drier because you need the mucus. It's better to thin the mucus and make it come out than it is to dry it out. Because if you dry it out, now you have these viruses, and there's nothing for your white blood cells to hang around in so that they can go after the viruses. So completely drying yourself out is not a good idea. You want to have some mucus, but it's nice to have that mucus be thinner. And the best way to do that is not to decongest yourself. The best way to do it is to thin it and flush it. And by all means, use a neti pot. If you want to get a Navage and use a mechanical, you know, an electric mechanical device to get the stuff through your nose, you could do that too. I think flushing water, salt water, through your passages, I think that's fine. That's not gonna take away your water. I mean, you can still, you know, hydrate and clean out the viruses and kill them on contact. But in terms of it, you don't want to dry yourself out. And thinning the mucus is fine because a thinner mucus is still going to help you get stuff out, and the mucus will move more readily. So the thing with this illness too is it fills up the sinuses near your ears, and so it gives you, so you feel lightheaded, and you know, you feel like your eustachian tube is plugged up. So we talked about the you know, spraying the essential oil in the air in the shower, and also doing the steam inhalations, and you can also, and we talked about the endonasal. The other thing you can do is you can massage your SCM muscle. So if you're watching this on YouTube or Facebook Live, you go ahead. So massaging your SCM, that's that ropey muscle on the side of your neck, and there's all kinds of lymph nodes along there. So you can massage, you start at your ear, and you use your fingers to pinch that muscle and massage all the way down, and do it on both sides, and you can just rub them, and that will help to move the lymphatics through. So there's a bunch of things that you can do, and then it's a really good idea to stay away from dairy. Even if you're not dairy intolerant, dairy causes increased mucus in anybody. It doesn't matter if you're dairy intolerant or not. It makes you make more mucus. People who sing and speak stay away from dairy before they have a speaking or singing engagement. So it's a good idea to stay away from dairy while you have this illness. And the other thing to stay away from is sugar. So sugar is just going to take up the resources of your liver. It's going to take up resources of your immune system and suppress your immune system. And it's going to feed the bugs, and it's going to feed your microbiome. You want to have a good microbiome in your gut to help you with your immune system. That the biggest part of your immune system is in your colon. That's where it is. So if you consume sugar, you're going to make more inflammatory microbiome, and then you have more inflammation in your body, and your body's going to use the nutrients that it needs to run your immune system to process the sugar. So you don't want to take away from that. So it's a good idea to avoid sugar as much as possible. I think it's fine to do honey in your tea. Honey has a lot of, it has bioflavonoids and it has anti-inflammatory compounds, and it's very soothing and it's antimicrobial. So I think honey is fine. I mean, you don't want to drink a bottle of honey, but having a spoonful, you know, teaspoon or two of honey and a few cups of tea, I think that's fine. Be careful if you're diabetic or you're pre-diabetic. Although there are studies that show that consuming honey can help you regulate your blood sugar. So it may or may not be a problem, but, you know, continuing to drink, and getting those fluids down is a good idea. And using something to thin the mucus is going to be helpful too. The other thing that's really good to do, the problem with this cold is it doesn't make you feel sick enough to lay in bed all the time. So you might be inclined not to turn off your life. The best thing you can do is turn off your life. Did I do that? No, I didn't. I worked because I don't have sick days. I mean, I can have a sick day if I want to, but I have to cancel patients and then they can't come back for months. So I decided to go virtual. And so the way I cut back, now, if you have the wherewithal to turn off your life, that is the best thing you can do, because you can stay home, you can read a book, you can watch trashy TV. If you're not into TV, don't do that. You can take multiple naps in the day. You can get a cup of tea whenever you want, and you have the bathroom right there. You can go to the bathroom because now you're going to be really overhydrated, and you can and eat soup and just really take good care. That's the best way, resting, because then you're using all of your energy. Your immune system is using all of your energy to fight the illness. When you use energy to do other things like exercise, especially cardio exercise, or work, or stress out in any way, you're using that cortisol. Cortisol is one of the things that runs your immune system. If it's busy helping you see patients or helping you do the accounts or taking care of kids or doing whatever it is you do in your life or getting exercise, it's not going to be as available to run your immune system, and it's going to take longer for you to get through the cold. So the thing is, this doesn't knock you out. It's not like this is not the flu. It doesn't knock you. It doesn't give you a fever, or it didn't give me a fever anyway, or Rod. And it doesn't knock you out enough that you feel like you shouldn't work. So I worked, but I cut back. And so if you can't completely shut it down, at least cut back. And what I did, because I'm able to do this, is I saw my patients virtually for 4 days. And that worked out because most people agreed to do it. I did see less patients because some people don't want to see me virtually. They want to see me in person. But most people did it. And so I was able to do that until I felt well enough to not do that. And that worked out well. And I also cut back by stopping cardio and by stopping my PT exercises and just doing very gentle yoga. If you don't feel like exercising at all, I think that's okay. I just get stiff if I don't do anything. And if I felt well enough to do yin and restorative yoga, I was going to do that. And there were days when I didn't feel like doing that, so I didn't. And today I had a chiropractic appointment. So that's the other thing. If your practitioners will see you, you should see them and, you know, tell your practitioner if you have an appointment with the chiropractor or with the acupuncturist, call them before you go. Tell them, I have a cold. I don't want to infect you. Do you mind if I come in? I won't come in. If you want to reschedule me, it's fine. And I had a bunch of appointments that I had to do that with. I called Nicole. And Nicole said, come in. She's like, no, absolutely, come in. I'm fine with it. And so Nicole, and therefore Nicole gave me points. Because that's the thing. Your practitioners can help you with the ailment. So Nicole gave me, you know, breathing points, nose points, chest points. I found little bruise marks where she put the needle. So that was really nice. And, you know, I always feel better after acupuncture. And I went to see Dr. Scott today, my chiropractor. And so he adjusted things around my back and my neck and my immune system and stuff like that. So that was really helpful too. Chiropractor and your acupuncturist can help you if you're sick, if they're willing to see you. But be kind. Don't go in without telling them that you're sick and give them the option to reschedule, because there's other things that you can do. And some practitioners don't mind and some do. I try not to see people when they have an acute illness. Although right now, since I was just sick, I might be okay with seeing them. And I might, you know, ask them to mask and have me mask. But generally, I don't see people with cold and flu symptoms just because I have all this immune stuff going on and I don't need an extra, I don't need to get sick. And because I'm self-employed, if I don't work, I don't make money. So I generally don't see people. I see people virtually if they're sick. And so that was one of the biggest boons that came from the COVID era, was we really ramped up virtual visits. And, you know, they made it really easy to do virtual visits, and insurance covers it. And so if people, now we always give people the option. They're absolutely welcome to come in, but if they want to be virtual, then we support them, because the technology is so readily available. They can see you on their phone, their tablet, their laptop, doesn't matter. Or you can just talk to them on the phone. You can see, if you're watching me on YouTube or Facebook Live, you can see that I am old because of how I'm holding my hand, because this is a phone. This is an old phone. It has the earpiece and the mouthpiece, and then a bridge in the middle that you hold up to your body like this, your head like this, right? If you're young, you do this. And when you're holding up phone, you're holding the phone, and this is how you hold the phone to your ear, like in a little claw. Here is my, we don't even have a landline in this house anymore. So here's my cell phone. You hold it up like this, like it's a claw. And so young people will hold it like this. And if you're a certain age, you hold it like this. This is phone. Crazy, right? And it's also Shaka Bra, right? Anyway, so that's this exciting cold. And then there are things you can take. I'm also taking some antiviral herbs. I'm taking a bunch of vitamin A. So I'm taking about 20,000 IU of vitamin A a day. I'm taking at least 2,000 to 3,000 milligrams of vitamin C. I'm taking 22 of zinc. I could probably take more zinc. I'm nervous to take more than 22 of zinc because I get a sensitive tummy from the zinc. I'm very fortunate I have a food-based zinc that doesn't give me an upset stomach. So I take one of those every day. And I'm taking a combination of herbs that has elder and astragalus and I think some raspberry flavoring, and it has maitake mushroom in it. So it's very nice. So I'm taking a couple of droppers of that a couple times a day. I'm taking the two cough syrups that I said. Early in the illness, I have a Echinacea propolis spray. So Echinacea is a very nice antimicrobial, a general antimicrobial. Propolis I love because propolis comes from anything from a bee. Bees are awesome. So bees make propolis, and propolis is a resin that bees make. It's very sticky, and they make it to disinfect the hive. And so there are ways to extract propolis from beeswax or honey. I'm not sure if they get it from the honey or the beeswax or how it's extracted, but propolis is something that bees make. It has a very distinctive smell and odor, and it doesn't smell like honey. It smells like very intense beeswax, I would say. And any herbal resins are sticky, and the great thing about resins is that they stick to the back of your throat. So there are a number of herbs you can use when you're sick. Like if you have, you have mucus dripping in the back of your throat, if you have a sore throat, resinous herbs can be helpful. So some of the resinous herbs, as I said, are propolis, and also poplar. Poplar buds was something that we used, and I haven't had poplar buds in a long time, but poplar buds are also resinous. Myrrh gum is something that has resin in it and that's sticky. Let me see. Are there more? I would say frankincense. I think frankincense is also resinous. And, frankincense, boswellia is a great anti-inflammatory herb, but definitely poplar. Yeah, poplar and myrrh and propolis, and the other one is grindelia. So grindelia, I love grindelia, but grindelia you can only find in the desert. But I still use it here because it's a plant that I love. I was so excited when we visited Colorado a few years ago, and we went on a hike. I think it was called, we were in outside of Boulder. It's called the Flatirons. These red rocks that are flat on the side. And so as we were walking up, I saw grindelia and I recognized it. And it's also known as gumweed, and it's very sticky. If you pick a gumweed flower, and you can stick it to yourself, and there's a picture of me somewhere with this gumweed flower stuck to my face because it's sticky and it'll just stick there. So it's full of resin. So grindelia is a very useful herb. It's a great herb for coughs. If you make an asthma formula, grindelia is one of the herbs that you can use. Some people might think maybe you don't use it here in the Northeast because it doesn't grow around here. I would still use it because I really like it. I have certain herbs. You'll find this, that if you spend time with herbal medicine, you develop an affinity to certain herbs. And grindelia is one of my friends. It's one of the herbs that I think of that I really enjoy using. Grindelia is also lovely if you get poison ivy. And so you can just take grindelia tincture and rub it on the poison ivy, and it will soothe you and help to bring down the swelling. But it is a great lung herb, and it's a great resinous herb. If you have a virus where you got stuff dripping in your throat, it'll help to stick in the back of your throat. and help to fight the virus. So like all resinous herbs. So as I'm saying this, I'm getting some mucus dripping into my throat, and I'm aware that the mucus is sticky. The nature of this virus is it makes sticky mucus, which is ucky. So that's why it's so critical to thin it, whether you do it with water or fluid, or the other thing is soup, of course. And don't forget that cayenne, turmeric, ginger can go in the soup, and pepper, and you know, black pepper's fine too, and cinnamon, all these nice warming herbs are going to be really helpful to dry you out and to make you feel this is a cold. Ron could not get warm. I am warmer than he is because I have more body fat than he does. But he had so much trouble getting warm with this thing. I mean, it really saps your vitality, and it's with you for a couple of weeks, and you're dealing with impediments to your breathing for all that time, and you just feel like you're under the weather. So I'm sure once this mucus moves on through, I'm going to feel a lot better, but it's been almost 2 weeks, not quite, it'll be 2 weeks in a couple of days. Hopefully I'll feel better then, but Ron is still, he's pretty much out and about, but still got the pressure in his ears, still got mucus going on. I think I'm going to be more assiduous with the, I'm going to take NAC and I'm going to take guaifenesin, which I haven't been as consistent with. So I'm going to go back to that. Anyway, so this is this exciting cold that is going on. I hope it's helpful to hear a bunch of things that you can do, because I am sorry to say this to you. You're probably going to get this unless you have a great immune system and you haven't been going anywhere near sugar. It's December now, so we're all, you know, and if you're listening to this, episode is dropping on December 24th, so it's Christmas Eve. And so if you're sick, if you haven't got this yet, you're about to spend time with your family. It's a blessing in disguise that I have it now, because I'm going to be done with it by the time it's Christmas, and I'm going to go see people, and then we're going to go visit my mother in January. So I got it over with. So that's kind of good. It is weird because Ron and I generally do not get sick in November. When I was a kid, I used to get sick. I used to be sick around my birthday every year. And, you know, I'd catch whatever was coming down the pike. And that stopped. And generally, Ron and I would get a cold or a cough in February. We got COVID in February of 23. And generally, when I would get bronchitis or, a cold or bronchitis or both, it would happen in late January, early February. And classically, I would go down and visit my sister and her family, because two of the boys have their birthdays in January. So I'd go at the end of January and celebrate Harry and Marley's birthdays. I would try to go at Hanukkah as well and then celebrate Tali's birthday. But I would usually come back from one of those visits sick. And that was classic, that I would come down with something either as I was leaving or after I get back, I would get sick. But that was the time of year, because it's just, I went through all the holiday season and it's been cold out and we're gang housed. And finally I would come down with something. But this year it happened now. What I'm hoping is maybe we'll skip the February cold. I don't know. We'll see how that goes. It depends. But like I said, this one is super contagious. So if you haven't gotten it, you're probably going to. And I think it's novel, which is another reason why we got it so early. And just everybody's getting it. And they complain that it's with them for 2 to 4 weeks. Yuck. I'm not excited about that. So hang in there. It'll be okay. All right. So Hanukkah's coming. I'm looking forward to that. If you're listening to this on Christmas Eve, Hanukkah is done. So I'm sure I had a great Hanukkah. So my next show, it will have already been Hanukkah for a bit. And so I'll talk about latkes and sufganiyot and stuff like that. Okay, so let's talk about, we have a little more time to talk about a couple other things. So let's start with the reduced heart attack risk with tailored vitamin D supplements. So I take vitamin D all the time, and I've heard different things about how much vitamin D you should take and what your vitamin D level should be. A couple years ago, I was at a conference, and one of my colleagues Dr. Todd Bourne, he quoted a study that's saying it's really not necessary to have your vitamin D much above 35 to 40 nanograms per milliliter. Then I went to my naturopath, Marissa with 1S, and she said that the studies show that much higher doses of vitamin D help you. You have much better cardiovascular outcomes and you have much better immunity. So she wants to see your vitamin D in the 60s, 70s, 80s. And that makes me nervous, but I refined my preference upward. And now I like to see people at least in the 50s, mid 50s is best. And if somebody goes into the 60s and 70s and they feel fine, then I'm okay with that. The last time I checked my vitamin D, I was at 69. And I think that I have one of the vitamin D SNPs, single nucleotide polymorphisms, one of the genetic variants that I'm not a great absorber of vitamin D. Because if I take plain vitamin D, it even if I take 5,000 IU a day, it stubbornly sits in the 40s. But if I take vitamin A and K2 with it, then it goes up. So I do take K2. I'm taking 160 of K2 on alternate days. And then I take usually around 15,000 IU of straight up vitamin A a day. And my vitamin D goes higher. And I have a vitamin D liquid now that's in olive oil, and each drop is 2,000 IU. So I have to be careful how much I take because it's easy to take a lot. I had another liquid that was 1,000 per drop, so it was a little easier to titrate, but I have to remember just take 1 to 3 drops of this stuff. So right now I'm taking 3 drops, like 6,000 IU, and I probably could take more because I'm actively fighting an infection. So anyway, so there's a study. This is this study. It came from Heart News. It's in the American Heart Association Scientific Sessions, and it's an abstract. And it shows that adults with heart disease prescribed vitamin D doses tailored to reach blood levels considered optimal for heart health, which is greater than 40 to 80 nanograms per milliliter. So I shouldn't worry about getting up to 80 nanograms per milliliter. They had a reduced risk of heart attack by more than half, 52%, compared to those who did not receive monitoring of vitamin D levels. And 85% of all study participants had vitamin D levels below 40 nanograms per milliliter at enrollment, and nearly 52% in the treatment group needed to take more than 5,000 IU of vitamin D each day, more than 6 times the 800 IU daily value established by the SBA, to reach blood levels of 40 to 80 nanograms per milliliter. So what do? I measure everybody who comes in. If you have insurance, unless you tell me, no, don't test my vitamin D, or unless you've been tested by another doctor recently, or I test everybody for vitamin D, like unless there's some reason not to, like you don't have insurance, you don't wanna, you just got tested by your other doctor very recently. Otherwise, I want a recent vitamin D. And it's true what this says. Most people who come in, regardless of their health status, they are too low. And most people, I would say that most people, when they come in, they're in the 20s and 30s. And I will occasionally see people. It's rare for me to see someone in the single digits, but it happens. And I sometimes see people in the teens. Most of the time, people are in the 20s and 30s. And if you're in the 20s and 30s, I'm going to supplement you. We are in the Northeast. You can make vitamin D from the sun, but you have to be uncovered. You have to be outside between when the sun is above 50 degrees above the horizon, and it never gets there in Connecticut from September to March. So you're going to have to supplement. And that's why there's more viral illnesses up here. And there are certain conditions like multiple sclerosis. You see more in above certain latitudes, and we are above that latitude. So I test everybody's vitamin D level. It's easier to make vitamin D if you live in Florida or somewhere where it's warm and you're in tank tops a lot, because the sun does make it over 50 degrees of the horizon for more of the year. So I am very fussy about making sure to test people's vitamin D, and I very, very commonly supplement people's vitamin D. And, you know, I offer it to them, and they can also get it on their own. And if they have trouble raising their levels, then we also, it's really good to take vitamin K2, MK2, MK7, because vitamin K2 will direct calcium out of your arteries and into your bones. And it also will help you to absorb the vitamin D better. So vitamin D with K2 is ideal. And as someone personally, and vitamin A will also help you to absorb your vitamin D. And the other thing that I'm doing that's good is, I'm reading Dr. Frank Aida, my colleague, and he always talks about taking your vitamin D with some fatty food. So personally, I take the vitamin D that I take is in oil. So that's why it's better to take, if you will take it as a liquid, it's better because it's in oil. And so my vitamin D is an olive oil, the one I'm taking now. And I have another one that I like to take. It's an MCT oil. So it's in fat already. So you're going to absorb it better. And I know I'm absorbing it well because I see that when I take it with the K2 and the A, my vitamin D is at a very nice optimal level. So let's see. So this study came out in New Orleans. Adults with heart disease, well, that's where the session was held. Adults with heart disease who had a previous heart attack and took vitamin D doses tailored to reach optimal blood levels reduced their risk of another heart attack by more than half compared to those who did not have their vitamin D blood levels optimized. This meeting happened November 7th to 10th in New Orleans in what year? I don't think it was, oh, this year. It happened this year. This just happened. This is dated November 9th, 2025. So the meeting is a premier global exchange of latest scientific advancements in cardiovascular research science. And previous studies found low vitamin D are linked to worse heart health. The Target D randomized clinical trial included adults with heart disease who also had a previous heart attack, determine whether achieving optimal D levels could prevent future heart attacks, strokes, heart failure, and hospitalizations or deaths. And more than 85% of participants began the study with D levels in their blood lower than 40 nanograms per milliliter. Oy vey. A level many experts believe is insufficient for optimal health. Unlike earlier vitamin D randomized trial that used standard doses, they personalized the doses. That's what I do. I give you vitamin D, I check your D level, and then I raise it up or down based on how it comes out. So they randomized people into two groups, and the standard care didn't receive management, the other group did receive management, and when it was above 40 nanograms per milliliter, levels were checked annually and doses adjusted if levels dropped below that target. Excessive vitamin D can lead to hypercalcemia, higher than normal calcium levels in the blood, kidney failure, and abnormal heart rhythm, but they believe in keeping the doses below 80 nanograms per milliliter. Now, Marissa told me it can go higher than that. I don't tend to feel comfortable with that. So 80 would be about it for me. And if somebody was at 80, was at 90, I'd be like, you could back off on the dose a little bit. So this is very interesting. So optimizing your vitamin D level can prevent your risk of having a future heart attack or stroke if you've already had one. I would guess, too, that it would prevent you from having one in the first place. And I really have to go. So thank you for listening. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores, and WHUS.org.